question number 12616, real one.
Mr. Fryer, real one. Whereabouts were you born, please? Was it in Southampton?
Yes, Southampton.
Which year was that?
18th of the 5th, 1916.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a seaman and then a dock worker.
A seaman in the Merchant Navy?
Yes, in the Merchant Navy. And then he had to retire, and then he went as a dock labourer.
Did you go to school in Southampton?
Yes.
How old were you when you left?
14.
Did you get the job?
Yes, I got a job. I used to come down to school for school leavers then, and I got a job as an errand boy. 10 shillings a week, and just delivering groceries.
How did you come to join the Merchant Navy?
How did I come to join the Merchant Navy? I joined the Merchant Navy when I was about 18, or just after, and I wasn't keen on it. I did a trip to Quebec on the Empress of Britain. I wasn't keen on it. It just didn't agree with me, what the heat of the engine room and being my first trip, so I decided to pack it in, which I did, and then I had various other jobs. And when war was declared, I just went down to the docks, and the Empress Britain had come in there, went down to the docks and signed on, rejoined the ship.
What was it about serving in the Merchant Navy that you didn't like, apart from the heat of the engine room?
Well, I think it was just for the fact that being a first trip, I was very sick. And with the heat of the engine room, it didn't improve things.
This was seasickness?
Seasickness. And then I suppose it was being in a room with about 10 others. You know, it was very crowded and you had to watch your belongings. You had to be very careful what you showed, you know. And it was just one of those things that I just decided I'd had enough.
Was that because of theft aboard ship?
No. Well, I didn't lose anything like that. But another thing was, we was going in the Gulf of St. Lawrence River, and we had a smack there. We hit a collier in fog, and I was on the 4 to 8 watch. And the alarm bells went up. We all had to go up on deck, mustered up on deck at both stations. And fog was very thick because you heard the fog horns then going 24 hours a day. And when you were in the engine room, you were about right below them. And it's the same, you used to get ringing in your ears all the time. And anyway, we went up on deck and you couldn't see nothing else but fog. And then about half hour it cleared, and then in front of us was this collier. We'd hit midships, hit this collier, and of course we had a haul in the bows, and we came home to Southampton on a Sunday, where usually it was Saturday. I think we used to sail on a Sunday and come home a fortnight afterwards on a Saturday, and we came home on the Sunday because we were late. And the shipwrights came aboard and patched up. She had a haul in the bow just below the anchor. And they patched her up and she sailed again Sunday night. You see? So that little thing alone upset me, you know. And that was that. Well, then, as I say, I had various jobs. And I was working... I don't know where it's when war declared or just before war declared. I'm not sure. I think it's when war was declared and the Empress of Britain came in to Southampton docks for repairs and that. And I just went down. I just decided to go back to sea. So I went down and saw
What was your motivation for rejoining in
Vietnam? Well, one thing, it was for the war. You know, we all had to do our bit for the war at that age. I was 24. And I just went down. I just had a word with Dad, and I said, well, I'm going back then. I went back to sea, and that was it.
In the pre-war days, had service in the Merchant Navy been popular with young men in Southampton?
Oh, yes. excuse me. Yes, it was popular for the simple reason it was a job.
Was it regarded as a good job?
Not really. In the days of the old coal burning ships, now that was hard work, because you had to go from the bunkers and fill your I wasn't on them, but you used to have to fill your wheelbarrow up and push your barrow to the fireman, you know, the stoker, to put the coal in the forest and all that, and it was really hard work. And in the old days, I can remember a mate of mine, he was on the castle boats, and they had to take their own bedding, because you only had palliasses, straw palliasses, and very thin blankets, and pillows. They always carried their own pillows. So you always saw the seamen going down to the ship, and they always had their pillows with them.
But in your day, in 1934, was it much better?
Oh, yes, it had improved a lot, but... it had improved a lot. Conditions were better. The only fault I found was you had too many men in one room. You know, these days you've probably got two to a room, to a cabin, in these days. But we got on all right. You know, it was what you made it, really. You know, there's good and bad everywhere, and sometimes there was more bad than good.
When you decided to rejoin in 39, was it easy to get in or not?
Well, I had no problems, because I had a discharge paper, you see. I didn't have a discharge book, I had a discharge paper. And I just showed it, went down on board, and just showed it to the engineer, and I got a job.
Which company did Empress of Britain sail for?
Oh, Canadian Pacific. She was a Canadian Pacific boat.
What was the reputation of Canadian Pacific Line?
Very
in
good. Very good. So they did a lot. They did a lot from Liverpool, but the Empress of Britain went from Southampton all the time. Then you had there was quite a few Empress boats: Empress of Russia, Empress of Canada, Empress of Asia. There was quite a few Empress boats, and of course then they gradually disappeared.
Was there much difference between the different Empress boats? Did they have different reputations, or were they much the same?
Well, I don't know. I didn't hear a lot. They had a lot of Mont boats, and they were pretty good. They just sailed from Liverpool to Canada, but I never went on any of those, so I couldn't tell you that. But the Empress of Britain, she was a jewel in the crown, really, the Empress of Britain, because she's a beautiful ship. You can't describe it, really. It was all beautiful oak carved fittings and everything. You know, it was a pity that she had to be sort of gutted out for troop carrying. You know, such a beautiful ship.
Were you there when she was gutted out?
No, because they'd done some of that just before I joined her, but they were doing it all the time, and different parts were taken ashore and stored and marked and stored and all that.
What did the gutting out consist of?
Well, they were just knocking down cabins and making larger areas for troops, for hammocks, so they could swing the hammocks, you see, instead of having all these separate cabins. And of course the troops, she carried 3,000 to 4,000 troops.
Did the crew's accommodation suffer because of it being turned into a troop ship?
No, this was more passengers accommodation.
What was the first voyage that you did in her in 39?
I don't know whether we went to the Clyde and picked up troops or Liverpool now. We went round, picked up troops, and we went out to Egypt through the Suez Canal then, and I'm not quite sure whether we dropped the troops and went back. I think we did, and then after that we assembled as a huge convoy and went to Australia, New Zealand, Australia, and I think we picked up the biggest convoy, because we had the Queen Mary, the Aquitania, Monarch of Bermuda, and of course the Empress of Britain. We had all these big ships going out to bring back the Australians and the New Zealanders, the Anzacs, I think they're called. And that was quite a big convoy. And when we came back with them, we went to we called in at Cape Town on our way back, and they absolutely took the town apart. They absolutely went mad. The Australians helping themselves, you know, just going in the shops and picking up what they wanted.
You mean looting the shops?
Looting the shops, yeah.
Did they do any damage?
Well, I couldn't say damage because I didn't look around to that extent. We didn't have time. But they did plenty of damage, according to hearsay, you know.
Did you see any of the misbehaviour?
Well, one I do remember is I was going by with my friend, my shipmate, and there was a drayman's cart delivering the beer, and they were just going to help themselves. You know, they just go and take it out and help themselves and walk away. And of course, they were dark fellas there then, and of course, they were scared of them.
They
just helped themselves.
Themselves too. Bottles of beer.
Bottles of beer. Yeah, and hearsay, I heard that they used to go in Woolworths and just help themselves. Just shoplifting, just helping themselves. And when we went back again with the English troops, because then Italy had come into the war and the Suez Canal was closed, so we had to go right round the Cape. And when we went back again, the English boys wasn't allowed ashore because of the behaviour of the Australians before them.
Weren't there people around to curb the behaviour of the Australians?
No, they'd have been outnumbered. They'd have been outnumbered. But they did. And they just went berserk. And then when we got to Scotland, I'm just trying to think of the name of the place.
Clydeside?
It's well known during the war.
Gurrock.
When we got there, of course, the ships laid out a bit, and we were getting the sightseers coming out. And a lot of the hearsay again, a lot of the troops just disappeared. They just went down the anchor chain into the boats, because the ladies from the red light district used to come out, you see, and they just disappeared.
Were these Australians? Or
Australians. There's no British on board. No British troops. They're all Australians and New Zealanders. I take it we would have New Zealanders because we went to Wellington. We picked our troops up at Wellington. New Zealand. So I should imagine we'd have New Zealand troops on board.
But was it Australian or New Zealand who misbehaved in Cape Town?
Well, I would say all of them. Once again, it's only hearsay. It's only hearsay, but we have had these stories. I think anybody would tell you the same.
So at Gurrock, these chaps deserted to go off with the prostitute?
Yes, yeah.
Did they come back?
That I don't know. I don't know, because we weren't involved that much. We had our duties now. We weren't involved that much to know exactly what went on. You see, we just went about our watchkeeping and did our duties.
Was it in 1939 or 1940 that there was the misbehaviour in Cape Town?
What is... 39. I think it could have early 40. Early 40. I can't give you the date. It's a long time to remember.
How did the troops behave aboard ship?
Well, the Australians are not too bad. Nothing outstanding, because you didn't notice a lot, you see, because you were watch-keeping and then sleeping, and you were below decks, and you didn't see a lot what went on.
Did any of the crew gamble with the troops? Because some of the British troops have mentioned to me about Crown and Anchor, lost money to the crew.
I expect it went on, but I never mixed with them like that, you see, because I wouldn't have gambled in any case. I wouldn't have gambled, but I never came across anything like that. The only time I came across money on the table was when I was on the Langibby Castle and we were going to Oran, and they had, in those days, I gave the troops invasion money. Their money was no good at all. I just had special invasion money. And I was on the sick then, when I was on the Langibby, but I still had to work because nobody was allowed off the ship for security reasons. So I had to go. If I was dying, I still had to go. And I was up in a forecastle head one day, and as true as God's my witness, I was up there in a forecastle head, and I was talking to one of these Yanks. And it was just after Pearl Harbor, and the ship was made a dry ship because of Pearl Harbor. And this Yank offered me £80 for a bottle of whiskey, which I couldn't get. And the £80 was no good to him. It's like 80 pence. It was absolutely no good to him. Because they were going to Oran, and they were going on an invasion. They didn't know where they were coming back or what, so... You know, they just unloaded their money.
This was an American?
That was American troops, yes. We took American troops to Oran.
Can you tell me a bit about the work that you were expected to do in the Empress of Britain, your own personal work aboard? What kind of tasks would you carry out?
Well, we just went down as watch keepers. We were called for the watch. We'd go down it. I was on the 4-8 watch. You would go down and you would take the burners out of the fires. You had boiler with 7 burners in. You had like three boilers with 7 burners in, and these burners were used to take the oil through to the furnace. Well, those burners had to be taken out, clean ones put in, and the dirty ones cleaned, all ready for next time. All the carbon and what have you had to clean it all off. Dirty job. And then while you was watching the steam gauges and everything, you were just doing a bit of cleaning, metalwork, you know, handrails, anything that shone had to be cleaned.
And you were classified as a fireman aboard?
Well, on the Empress of Britain, you were classed as a boiler attendant. But otherwise, in other shipping lines, it was, because that was Canadian, other shipping lines, you'd be just classed as a fireman.
Any other incidents that happened to you that you can recount whilst you were in the Empress of Britain before it was attacked?
Before it was attacked, no, only thing I could say, we had some good times, you know, we were in good spirits, just went about our duties, you know.
Did you run into the enemy at all before the attack?
No, no, not on the Empress of Britain. We had a few warnings, you know, scared warnings, but nothing came of it. It's only on the actual day, I think, anything like that happened.
Did you feel nervous at all, serving in the Empress of Britain?
Not really. if anything happened, it happened. There's not a lot we could do about it, but no, it just went about our job.
Did you feel that you were adequately defended by escort ships?
Oh yes, we didn't have much protection, because in the early days of the war we just didn't have the ships. We didn't have the protection, you see. So when we had troops on board and we were in a troop convoy, yes, we had protection. But as far as the Empress of Britain was concerned, regarding her speed, she could outrun a submarine. So
how fast could she go?
I think it's about 35 knots, 32, 35. And anyway, that's the reason she didn't get any escort. Because of her speed. But any slower ship, and then they would have escort. But they used to rely on the speed of the ship. And that is why I expect she got caught. Excuse me.
Now, the attack actually occurred, according to your notes here, on the 26th of October, 1940.
Mm.
Can you tell me what voyage she was on then?
She was on the way home. We'd been out and delivered some troops to Egypt. We came back. I'm a bit mixed up sometimes with the other ships. We came back. I've got an idea. We called in. We had a few passengers on board, and that, when I say that, it was army personnel. On board, we didn't have many, and we were coming back. We were due in Liverpool on the 27th, on the Sunday, and this happened at 9:30.
In the morning or afternoon?
Morning. I was on the 4 to 8 watch, and I came up at 8 o'clock, had breakfast, had a bath, and like I got in these notes. Had a bath, and every day regular I used to go to the stern of the ship where the laundry was, and I used to go to the stern of the ship just for a break, just to go and have a smoke and have a chat. And every morning there used to be the laundry staff used to come out for a smoke, and we used to just sit around having a smoke and a chat. And this particular day it was a bit cloudy, and I went down as usual walk, and nobody was there. So I got fed up with my own company. So I just put my cigarette out, and just as I was going inboard by the galley, so the alarms went, so the first bomb went. And as far as I can tell you, what I was told, there was 4 out of 6 bombs hit her. As I went inboard down through the galley, because I decided to go to my quarters. Not because I decided to go inboard, because nobody to talk to. I was going down to sleep. And then as I was on the way down, so the first bomb dropped. Where I would have been, it dropped a deck or maybe 2 decks above the laundry. And as I went in, I glanced at the clock, the galley clock, and it was 9:30, galley clock. And as I went down to my quarters, excuse me, it was like a billiard ball fashion. As I was going down, everybody was coming up, because I had me mind on belongings. But anyway, we went down, and then we were told of the tannoy. We were told to muster on D-deck Square, which we did. And after a time, everybody I think had just what they had on them. You had no time to gather things up, and we was all on the deck square handing round cigarettes, what we had, and had to ration them out because nobody had any excess, you know. And I suppose it must have been 10 to hour pass when the abandoned ship went. So we had to go up to the boat deck, and on the way up I heard somebody, a mate of mine, calling me, and he always called me Jack. I don't know for what reason, but he did. He always called me Jack, and he cried out, and he had nothing on his feet. Barefooted, you see. And as we went through the saloon, he couldn't get through because of broken glass, debris, and what have you. So, of course, I had to give him a chucky back up onto the boat deck.
Give him a what?
A chucky back. Carry him.
A piggyback.
Piggyback. And which I did up on the boat deck, and then I lost sight of him. But I know he wasn't lost with his ship, because I learned that afterwards. But anyway, went to go to the boats, and the boats were lowered, and all we had then was had a Jacob's ladder, you know, a rope ladder. And of course, I suppose the boat deck of the Empress of Britain was 60 to 80 foot, and we had to go down this Jacob's ladder. And if you haven't been on one, it's hard to explain. But going down, and there was a youngster there, a Liverpool kiddie, and doing his first trip, and he couldn't get down quick enough, so consequently he was treading on my head. He couldn't get down quick enough, you see, so he'd bump, bump, bump. Anyway, when we got to the bottom of the ladder, I suppose we had about 10 or 12 feet to drop from the ladder into the boats. And it's just one of those awkward moments. And then we were ordered to pull away from the ship, which we did, because it's not a case of panic, but you get everybody talking at the same time. And it was pull away from the ship. If she goes down, a suction will take us as well. And that was in everybody's mind. So anyway, we pulled away from the ship. Of course, she didn't sink, because she was sunk the following day by torpedoes. And we pulled away, and we had just had to pull away, and I suppose we had about 6 or 7 hours in the boat. And then we were picked up by a...
What was it like during those 6 or 7 hours?
Well, luckily, the sea wasn't rough, so we weren't too bad. But it was bad enough, because I had no teeth. My teeth was soaked, but we had no teeth, so I had a job to eat biscuits and that, you know. And all we had what was in the lifeboat. But food didn't bother us at that moment.
And water?
Water, that didn't bother us a lot, because I didn't see anything different, no panic or anything like that, you know.
Was it crowded in the boat?
Comfortable. We saw some of the lads were jumping overboard. I had a mate that couldn't swim a stroke, but he just jumped overboard and lived. Others were sliding down the ropes, burnt their hands, and I saw them afterwards when we came home, down at the Labour Exchange, with their bandages all around their hands, you know, where the ropes have cut into them. And then we just kept rowing, and eventually we were picked up by a fishing trawler going back from patrol, and it was called the Patsy Hendren, after the old cricketer, an old cricketer. And we were taken aboard the Patsy Hendren, and they didn't have much to give us to eat. I always remember they had some corned beef hash, so we had this corned beef hash, and they couldn't do enough for us. And then we were transferred to a Polish destroyer called the Berza.